Commander Worf pretends to write a poem. Odo says Chief O'Brien and Dr. Bashir look a couple centimeters shorter. And honey, I shrunk the crew. Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Seventh Rule with Sirach Lofton.
Hello, hello.
My name is Ryan T. Husk. Today, we're doing a review of Deep Space Nine, Season 6, Episode 14, One Little Ship, written by David Weddle and Bradley Thompson, directed by Alan Craker, February 18th, 1998. It is a NOG episode, so we're joined, of course, by Melissa Longo.
Hello, hey. Hello, hello. It's so great to be here right now.
I was wrong. It's Natasha Longo, apparently. Oh. Natasha Longovska. How's everybody doing?
All right.
How are you doing?
Melissa, don't start this press. You're not going to be able to keep this up for 50 minutes.
I'm not going to.
Trust me. You don't want to start something now and then be like, be stuck with it all day. Anyway, so yeah, February 18th, 1998. Where were you? I was thinking about that. Like, maybe by then, the Y2K thing was already started being talked about, you know, 98, especially into 99, just to like to go back into the mentality of the times back then. And Deep Space Nine had just done Far Beyond the Stars. This was certainly the other end of the spectrum from that one. It's light, it's easier, it's funny. You know, there's still some stress and there's still some progression of the overarching story, but it's a fun episode, right?
Mm-hmm. It was a fun episode.
Oh, and by the way, I just want to say, everybody, please be sure to give this video a like, give this audio 5 stars. Please make sure to subscribe. If you can support this show, go to patreon.com/the7th rule. Once again, that's patreon.com/the7th rule. If you cannot support financially, like, subscribe, give 5 stars, comment, share this with your friends. That is the freest way to help support this show. And it is as good as liquid latinum. It's virtual latinum. So we thank you for that. And with that, so sorry, Sirach, please continue.
No, I was just going to say about that time period. Mm-hmm. Prince had a song where he said, "Party like it's 1999. And that New Year's leading up to 1999 was the most appropriate year to play that song. So I remember dancing to that song on New Year's of 1999.
I remember that as well.
You guys. Yeah.
Melissa, did you party like it was 1990? Because, you know, everybody was like, oh, my God, there's a song called Party Like It's 1999. And we're about to go into 1999, you guys.
Yes.
Get it?
Yeah. Get it?
Do you remember that?
Like, yeah.
I remember the song, but I only listened to it on the radio. I didn't actively go out and listen to it.
That's true. You're only like 6. You probably don't even remember.
Sure, we'll go with that.
Anyway, yeah. So this was another one of those episodes where I didn't quite remember it at the very beginning, but then as soon as they mentioned they're going to shrink people, you're like, oh yes, that's right. They're trying to boost their ship sales for their toy line in this episode.
Okay.
Yeah. There were, you know, sometimes when I'm watching a DS9 episode, you know, for example, watching Far Beyond the Stars before this, I didn't really need much of an explanation about the tech and the science. Right. We talked about that. I just went with the story. You didn't really need to say, you know, because of this anomaly and da 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 da, they're back in 1950. I didn't really need to hear all that. I bought it the way they sold it to me. It was happening in Sisko's head, and that was enough for me.
Yeah.
But in this episode, I found myself kind of questioning the tech a little bit. right? And saying to myself, would that be possible? And how come that is? And finding myself asking myself questions about whether I buy the way they're selling it to me. And I wish that I was able to get it, you know, without that kind of a thing, because you start to question things. One of the questions I had, for example, when they when they're talking about being miniaturized, she's laughing in the beginning, and you know, Kira's like, "Oh God, we're going to shrink these guys. It's so funny," you know. And Nog says, "Smaller than a coffee cup,"
yeah.
Which I love that the whole exchange, because it actually shows kind of the familiarity that they have with each other in Ops. I love that part of this story, the relationship building and the relationships that are formed. So that part of the story I like. The part where I start to get into the questioning is saying, well, I think Bashir said something like, well, you know, O'Brien was like, is this going to work? And he was a little bit nervous about being shrunk down. And I think Dax said some kind of throwaway line like, yeah, we tried it in the test simulation or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, with the drones that we sent through.
Drones, right.
And yeah, and that made me say, well, you know, drones is one thing, but human life is another. I need some more draw experience with this, right? Can we send a rat through next time? Or can we send like some kind of life form?
The Rock, so you don't want to be the lab rat then?
No, that is instantly, I was like, seriously, hasn't been tried that much? There's no like background information. Like, you know, Starfleet, like, oh no, you remember when Starfleet already, we tried this, or the theory of that they proved already. Some kind of better explanation, as opposed to, yeah, we tried it one time, it worked that once. Remember that one time? That wasn't enough for me. And then it just led to more and more of those kinds of questions. I don't know about you guys.
Like, yeah, we tried it on a peach. How different can a human be? What's the big deal? Get in there, you big wuss.
Yeah, a little bit.
Well, that raises the question in my head as to who were the first guinea pigs to try out transporters, because that you would think is far more dangerous, because they're splitting up all your little molecules and then putting them back together. So who were the guinea pigs for that test?
Brainy. They're like, there's a strip of latinum on the other side for you, buddy. They were
actually that would be an interesting short film to see how they tested all of these things. Maybe Lower Decks, something for Lower Decks to cover,
or Short Treks,
Short Treks. But essentially, you know, the first replicator experience, the first transport experience, these kinds of, you know, first warp core breach, the guy who had to figure out that you don't want to go in there.
What kind of food was replicated in the first replicator, and how did they know that it was nutritious?
It's probably
applesauce.
the Cardassian apple. Okay.
Yeah. Some kind of sauce.
Yeah.
But that would be good to know. And also, like, you know, what person is credited for coming up with inventions and things of that nature. That could be a whole backstory of reference. But essentially, I was waiting for that level of explanation, as opposed to, yeah, we tried it one time with that little model. You know, it just wasn't enough for me. And so then it started going on and on from there about like questions. But once again, I did like the relationships between characters.
Yeah.
You know, also, not to segue too much, but I wanted to point out that a couple of our favorite writers, and by favorite writers, I mean, we've mentioned them a few times before. It's David Weddle and Bradley Thompson, because they seem to appear always together, you know, and written by, they're a good writing team, obviously. And when you look them up, you see that they've done a ton of Deep Space Nine episodes as like executive story editor and all that in the later seasons. Right. But before that, clearly they were just brought on as, you know, like a one-time writer, and they got a story by for Rules of Engagement, and teleplay by The Assignment, written by Business as Usual and Sons and Daughters, and this one, One Little Ship. And then from there, they moved on to higher titles like story editor and executive story editor. So this was the final episode that they did that, I guess, you know, I don't really know how the inner politics work, but that seems like it convinced the room to be like, okay, we've been doing this almost 6 years. Can you just handle this episode? And then they work their way up into actually being part of the team, not just like a, you know, writer's version of a day player or something like that. They actually, you know, got staffed as executive story editor and story editor. So good on them. I'd love to have them sometime to see how that process kind of works. And if, you know, something that they were trying to do, or if they just, you know, if the writers just threw that at them and said, hey, what are you doing for like the next, I don't know, year and a half? Like, do you mind being on the team? Anyway, just wanted to point that out with those guys.
Cool. That's cool.
Yeah.
Yes, Melissa, I'm sorry. That's all I have about them. I talk about more. I didn't mean to like ruin the conversation with that. She's like, that was, why? I don't know where to go with that. That was it.
Yeah, that would be fun to find out where they came from. All right, but I wanted to.
And they also went into Battlestar Galactica after that. Really? Yeah, and they did. They're currently doing For All Mankind, which is a really cool one as well. They worked on The Strain and Falling Skies, which I believe Doug Jones acted in both of those. CSI, tons and tons of stuff. Anyway,
Doug Jones was in The Strain.
I believe so. I remember seeing him at least in one episode with like a big open maw.
Huh.
Anyway, sorry.
My cousin
please
was in that show.
See. That's why I brought this up.
Wow.
To connect
world.
All the dots.
Yeah.
Yeah. But back to, you know, actually we should get a chance if we can reach out to them and see if we can get them on the show. I'd love to,
yeah.
Talk about their journey and, you know, obviously they probably have some of their roots and beginnings in DS9 as they've, you know, moved their way up the writing ladder. But back to the episode specifically, the moment that I loved really the most, Melissa, was when I like Nog covering for Worf and like that kind of.
Yeah.
So cute.
The kid.
Oh my gosh. Yes, I love that moment. There is actually so many wonderful moments between characters. And I love that you brought up the relationship and familiarity, because that's exactly what I wrote in my notes too, was the familiarity of the entire crew. And it's wonderful, the interactions between Kira and Sisko when they're laughing about them being small, and then Worf and Nog are like, well, I don't see what's so funny about that. And Nog is hurt because he's like, yeah, why is it funny to be small? and then when they're working together in the warp core, you know, there's still that level of camaraderie that is wonderful, and which is the reason why they work so well together and are able to escape the Jem'Hadar so well. It's a wonderful look at teamwork and not just one person is the hero in the story. They all have a part to play in the solution of this problem. So, and I like to see that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's a really good point. That's what Star Trek does so well, is that everybody has their job, everybody has their moment. Sometimes an episode is focused on one specific character, but usually it's more of an ensemble in the truest way. We still know who the captain is. We still know who the boss is, even if it's not specifically a Sisko episode. like, this is not a really, you know, if anything, you can maybe say it's about Dax and Worf, because that's kind of, it starts off with Dax and, you know, with Worf being concerned for Dax, and it closes. But really, it's not really, it's just an ensemble episode. Everybody has their parts and everybody's a hero.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think DS9 does that really well in illustrating how you don't have to rely on one person all the time to save the day. They can count on each other to, you know, play the part, or, you know, fill the roles that they're good at. And it's nice to see that Sisko trusts his crew as much as he does, and puts his faith in their ability to do their jobs, because they can do their jobs. So it's nice to see that. And it's nice when people do, you know, stand out and shine, and it's because they have the support of the rest of the crew. So, yeah.
Yeah. And so the examples that I give of those moments of the kind of camaraderie between each other, you know, when Nog covers for Worf, it's Sisko that takes notice of it. He says, "Oh, look, he's just covering for his buddy here. Looks like we got a friendship brewing here," or something to that effect, right?
Yeah.
So that's the observation and the interplay. The other interplay was kind of Sisko laughing along with Kira in the moment where he decided to join her in her laughter, because I guess her laugh makes him laugh. So that was another just small moment, but it just shows that how the chemistry between people. Mm-hmm. I also like the moment when O'Brien is looking out from the mini ship at Nog as they're kind of assessing what Sisko's plan is to, like, infiltrate the computer system.
Great.
And that moment when O'Brien is breaking it down, he's like, you know, Worf's got to go and do this, and Sisko's trying to distract them but then he says Nog's the key, and that was a great moment for me too, because it's just like, it showed to me how far he's come as a character from being somebody who's like, get out of the way, we're working over here, to now he's the key, right? Nog's the key, like, his information, what he's about to do, his skill set, without him, they can't really pull this off. You know, Nog's a smart kid. That was the other line right after that. He said, Nog's the key. Nog's a smart kid. You know, he'll figure it out. And I just like the way, you know, here O'Brien is now kind of tipping his hat and complimenting him without him even knowing it, like, from far away. Mm-hmm. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. It's important that they keep showing the progression of Nog, the character, because we don't want to see Nog going to Starfleet Academy, then becoming a cadet, then suddenly he's just great at everything. That wouldn't make sense. We want to see bit by bit by bit, and we're watching it through the eyes of his superiors going like, oh, right, very good, or hey, or he's doing well, you know, like, they're being convinced bit by bit, so we're being convinced bit by bit. And another trick that the writers are doing is really they're explaining it to Bashir, you know, on the script, but the point of that is to explain it to us. You know, they're going like, well, here's the plan, Bashir, blah 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 blah, you know, like, they're letting us know, so here's what's going on, here's the story. And I was thinking about Nog and how he fits into this crew. And I was thinking, if they had not done this, you know, brought Nog up, you know, from the character he was into the character that he is, they would only have three officers there. They'd have Sisko and Worf and Kira, and it really wouldn't have worked. They might be able to bring on Odo, but then who's watching the station, you know? So I always thought that they needed an extra officer or two, because when the show first started, there were four actual Starfleet officers, and that's it. Four Starfleet officers, and then Worf and Odo. And I felt like in order to create the stories that they needed to create and really expand the show, they needed to, it was a little thin on officers. And then they brought Worf, then they added Nog, then they added a ship, and now it's It's like this full complement. But I don't know, if Nog wasn't there, who do you think they would have replaced him with?
I don't think there is anybody they could have replaced Nog with.
Eddington?
Because maybe he's dead.
You're a little too happy about that.
But I think Nog is just the natural choice for that part. And it's great because it's Nog's teachers that are acknowledging his growth, you know, and seeing that he's actually grasping what he's been taught from O'Brien, from Sisko, from Kira, from Worf. He's absorbing all of this stuff and doing it successfully. And it doesn't happen all, you know, at one time. It's kind of similar to Prodigy in that way. Prodigy's doing a great job of illustrating this teamwork and showing that to learn something, you have to do it over and over and over again to sometimes to find the solution. It's not just going to happen immediately. And so I think Nog is the perfect person to illustrate that. I lost the word, but illustrate that.
And illustrate the growth. But also, you mentioned who else could do it. Well, it'd have to be somebody in Starfleet, because I mean, we know that Rom has the technical knowledge to be able to pull something off like this, right? Because he does have advanced engineering skills. But he wouldn't be necessarily able to, unless he was commandeered, you know, to be in part of a Starfleet mission, because he's
he wouldn't be on the mission.
Right. Yeah. Because he's not in, he's not an officer.
Right.
So, Melissa, this is the last time you're showing up drunk. Okay. It's too early in the day to be drunk off yamek sauce.
Yeah, I blame it on Natasha.
Oh yeah, that's right. It's 5 o'clock in Russia.
Okay. Yes. But no, there was another moment that I really liked too. There was a moment where Nog is telling Sisko, you know, that he's been trying to run various algorithms, and every time he gets past the first step into the second step, it resets and resets all the code, and he has to start all over again. And he's kind of frustrated, almost to the point where he's about, you know, he's like, this is hopeless almost, right? There's no way it can be done. And there's a very good moment between him and Sisko there where he tells Sisko, he's like, so, hey, if this doesn't work, do you have a backup plan in case, you know, in case things don't work out?
Oh yeah.
And Sisko's like, he looks at him and you're like, you're thinking, you know, what's he going to say? That's what I'm thinking. What's Sisko going to tell Nog? Like, don't, none of your business, or don't worry about it. Or I know he's not going to lay out the backup plan, but yes, he did lay out the backup plan. He's like, yeah, I'm going to blow the strip up. I'm going to destroy the ship, which means us in it. Right. I guess.
Right. Welcome to Starfleet, kid.
Yeah,
this is the real world.
We're all gonna die. Yeah,
yeah. Nox look is like, okay, maybe I should get back to work.
Give me a second. Give me another chance. Wait a minute. Hold on a second.
Yeah, I'll figure this out.
Actually, that moment where Aaron as Nog went like, you know, he has that kind of nervous reaction. I kind of stopped and pictured Aaron doing it. You know, because sometimes you can just get lost in, you know, Aaron is here, Nog is here. But every once in a while, you try to connect the two and see, is that an Aaron-ism, or is that, you know, or is that Aaron just creating an ism for Nog? And I couldn't quite come up with an answer for that, because I never really saw Aaron really do it that extreme, or maybe he just kind of got an Aaronism and made it more extreme. You know what I mean? Like, like kind of to create the character, he just brought up that reaction to a higher level. But anyway, sometimes I try to like piece that together and figure like, where did that come from? Did he create that reaction, or is that something that he always did and like amplified it? But we do have to take a very quick break. We'll be right back on the seventh rule.
The new Super Beats Heart Chews Advanced is now supercharged with CoQ10. Support your healthy CoQ10 levels and blood pressure with two chews a day. Visit RadioBeats, BEETS.com, and save 15% with promo code DEAL.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the seventh rule with Ciroc Lofton and Melissa Longo. As you know, my name is Ryan T. Husk, and we're doing a review of Deep Space Nine, Season 6, Episode 14, One Little Ship. And very quickly, here are the trivioids that may or may not have made the cutting room floor. Oh, that was a really funny line. The Jem'Hadar want these chairs off the bridge of the Defiant. That's definitely a Melissa line right there. I should have just led with that.
Yes.
There is a new race of Jem'Hadar that my computer auto-corrected to Jet Radar. Kira says they shrink to the size of a coffee cup, but it's actually half the size of a comm badge. The Kid just covered for Worf. Honey, I shrunk the crew. Bashir does a dad joke. Deep Space Nine tries to boost their model ship sales. The Jem'Hadar first likes initiative, a trait the Gammas lack. Worf pretends to write a poem for Jadzia, and Odo says Chief O'Brien and Bashir look a couple centimeters shorter. Lisa, what was the dad joke?
I remember. Bashir was telling O'Brien that he needed to clean up the inside of that tube, and O'Brien was like, I forgot what he said, but then Bashir was like, "Oh, I'm sorry, that was small of me."
Yeah, that was it. That's the one.
It was so funny.
To rock and I laughed out loud.
I thought they gave Bashir all the cheesy lines in this episode. The small of me one was one of them. He did that one well though.
My word.
Yeah.
My word.
The other one was when Dax said, "I have a light touch." And Bashir says, "That's not what Worf said."
Yeah. Hey, like, oh. Get it?
Oh,
huh?
Oh. Yeah. Yeah, I was like, doctor.
I was like, wow. Dude, that's a little low blow right there. That's too personal. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's that familiarity again.
How funny would that have been? How funny would it have been if she says, "I've got a light touch," and Bashir goes, "That's not what Worf says," and she just turned to him and went, and be like, "Oh," so she'd be like, "I don't know you like that, Bashir. Get off me, man. We're at work."
I know. We're at work.
That would have actually worked for me. I would have been good with that.
Maybe you're right. I don't have a light touch.
Yeah. Was that that would have been a great one. So yeah, she would have been good for that. But those were the kinds of moments that were, you know, back and forth to me in the episode that made it feel good. And the other one was the one you just let off in the trivioid, which is I thought the closing scene with Odo and so Quark
was
hilarious, because Odo comes in very serious and he's good at delivering that brand of humor, which he's just on the edge of drama, but it's right there on the cusp of humor, and he does it so well.
You know who I think, and I could be wrong, and Ciroc, you're definitely the person to ask. I feel like that's the kind of delivery that Avery has in his humor, where he's playing it straight, but just with the tiniest twinkle in his eye, to where you're like, I think he's fucking with, is he fucking with me?
Yeah. Yes. And he was doing that. He can do that, you know, all essentially as great actors. That's the way you play it. You know, you study the drama, you study the comedies, and you know that the delicacies between the two. But you know, Avery's more rooted in the dramatic arts than so much into comedy. He understands comedy. He knows all about it as far as the history and the knowledge behind it. But ultimately, he's made a decision to root himself in the drama. I would say Odo or Rene is, you know, because he had done the comedy in the past and worked on those kinds of shows, had a different level of playfulness when it comes to that.
You know, but I didn't want to turn you too much away from that scene. I want to talk a little bit more about that scene. I didn't mean to turn us from that, because I feel like that may have been, and I could be wrong with this. I'm wrong very often in this public forum. Sorry. But it feels like this was the first time that Odo and Quark were in on a joke together rather than against each other. It felt like this was the first time that they actually came together at the end. Even in the past, like in The Ascent, I believe the episode where they had to climb up that high mountain and they're fighting the whole time, but then they become friends, or they're like Armin is, or Quark is saving his life. Even at the very end, when they have to work together and they're in the hospital bed, what's the punchline? The punchline is, I still hate you. I hate you too, right? So even then, the punchline is them pulling apart. The joke is them hating each other. This was the first time where it ended on them coming together. And I was expecting the opposite to happen. I was expecting, you know, Quark to say, oh, who says you don't have a sense of humor? And I was waiting for Odo to then turn on him and, you know, don't get used to it or whatever. But nope, they allowed that moment to finally happen 6 seasons later. And I don't know, were there other moments where they actually ended on coming together?
Well, I mean, I think in The Ascent, they said they hated each other, but there was a lot of love in that hate.
Of course, and, that was actually a metaphor for saying, I love you. Yeah, that's what they were really saying to each other. Yeah.
And in this final scene, in this final moment, when Quark comes up, I was like, well, see how well he knows Odo? Aww. He knows him so well that he knows when Odo is joking. And he, you know, he was essentially Odo's wingman and swooped in and sealed the deal for that, because
right. And I was expecting that's usually the so punchline is them pull, like I was expecting, like maybe he says, they say you don't have a sense of humor, and Odo says whatever he says, and then maybe Quark puts his arm on Odo's shoulder like a pal, and Odo looks at him like, who the fuck, and he pulls it off something. But I was like, wow, they're actually gonna let us have this moment.
Yes, it was wonderful. It was so great. I loved it.
And that's what I think this episode did a very good job of, is building the relationships and showing us the kind of closeness that the characters have with each other. Mm-hmm. And I appreciated that a lot watching this episode. The other thing I thought we got a good insight to was the Dominion. And seeing real kind of internal conflict inside of their structure and their forces, right? Learning about this new generation of Jem'Hadar that had been essentially created as a replacement model for the old batch, right? And the internal struggles that are there. I think even at one point, the Vorta said, yeah, okay, I don't have time for this. You guys fight about this later, you know? But almost giving them permission to fight, I thought. It seemed like instead of saying, no, you guys are going to have to work together and, you know, and follow orders, you know, and you're going to work it out and you guys are one team, he almost said, like, yeah, I get that you're going to fight and you guys go ahead and fight about it.
Almost egged it on, yeah.
Right. He almost pitted them against each other.
Which is a classic strategy of somebody that's trying to keep power, is you want the people below you fighting it out so that that person, that, you know, authoritarian, holds on to their control, you know, because if they stop, they're worried that if they stop fighting amongst themselves, they'll realize how shitty you're actually treating them, you know? So that's that. I don't know if that was deliberately done. I believe it probably was, because that is a typical trait of bad guys, you know, and villains and evil authoritarians, and as to keep the people below them squabbling.
Right. But it also illustrates how it doesn't help them, because they end up being defeated because they're not working together, as opposed to the flip side, where Sisko is not that kind of leader. So, and his team knows what they're doing. They work together. They might have, you know, a tiff here and there. You know, Worf did go after Nog, but then Kira covered for Nog, you know. Ultimately, they're all on the same side, whereas the Jem'Hadar were not, and it cost them their lives.
What do you think Worf would say if he heard you say that he and Nog had a tiff? He'd be like, I do not tiff. I merely stated.
Oh, yeah, that's too dainty of a word for Worf.
I thought Sisko also did a good job in this episode of recognizing the kind of battle that was happening within the Jem'Hadar and playing off of that to gain his own tactical advantage in in the episode, right? Why are you moving so slow? Well, because you're this guy over here, he keeps telling me something different than what you just told me. And so he just kept building that up, right? And playing on that for his own advantage. I thought it was another good way to show how clever he is and how quick he adapts to situations to, you know, to find the best way out.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this whole episode showed everyone had such great knowledge of the ship and their role in the crew, from Kira fixing the warp drive. And I was like, oh my gosh, she's so smart. And then, I always say that, but,
and that's okay.
And then it being pointed out that Nog really knows what he's doing, and Jadzia knows what she's doing, and Sisko is great at, you know, figuring out strategy, and he'd be great in a chess match. But so everyone had their moments of brilliance in this episode, I think, and I love that. I love to see when they show that everyone's a smart player in the game, you know.
Mm-hmm. And I did, just to touch on a little bit more, I thought that was a really nice element that the writers added about them creating Alpha Quadrant specific Jem'Hadar. You know, a lot of that is because of distance. You know, they can't just keep shuttling in people from the Gamma Quadrant or whatever. So they start creating some in the Alpha Quadrant. And while they're mixing up the soup, you know, they're like, well, let's, you know, make them fit a little bit more with what's going on in the Alpha Quadrant. I don't know exactly how much they change. I noticed a different hue in the first and the second. I believe the first was a little grayer and the second was a little bluer. But I don't know if that was, you know, if the differences are visual, or if it's just biological or internal. But I thought that was a really smart element to create, because then it also makes us think about, it reminds us of other things in life where, you know, some old way is being supplanted by a new way, and that both ways actually have something to learn from each other. You know, the newer guys obviously were built for the Alpha Quadrant, so the older guys could learn that new strategy. But clearly in this episode, the more experienced Gamma Quadrant guy, he's been in a lot of battles with these guys and he knows their tricks, but the first wouldn't listen because he's that impetuous youth. He's like, I know everything. Right. Boy, oh boy, am I, I know it all. I'm 4 years old.
No, he would probably be like a year, maybe. The elder would be more like four.
No, I think they would say, they said, if a Jem'Hadar reaches seven, they're a celebrated elder. So yeah, he's 4 to 7 if he survives that long. Yeah.
Yeah, I was looking up a little bit about this because the ship that they were on was called the Rubicon.
Yeah.
And I wanted to do a little bit more kind of background about the Rubicon, which is this river in Italy. And there's a historical kind of background or information that ties to the Rubicon, and that is attached to Julius Caesar.
Ooh, I'm listening.
Yes. So according to historians, Caesar uttered the famous phrase, Alia iacta est, upon crossing the Rubicon. Now, that phrase in Latin translates to the die is cast, which is another DS9.
Yes, it is. Oh, it's a rock coming through in the clutch. Very good.
Yeah, so
he got the last playoff in the final seconds.
Hey, I'm doing my homework. Sometimes I do my homework. So this phrase signified that his action of crossing the Rubicon was irreversible. Now, the phrase crossing the Rubicon is now used to refer to committing irrevocably to a grave course of action, which is similar to the phrase of passing the point of no return. So that's a little history on the Rubicon, crossing the Rubicon, the die is cast, and DS9. So I thought it was interesting there that that all of this stuff, I'm sure, is rooted in the writer's knowledge and their kind of interest in, you know, ancient Roman culture, you know, all of these kinds of things, mythology. So, you know, it's good for us to just dig a little bit deeper to find the things that inspire the writers to use certain words and phrases and titles.
Melissa, don't you feel like a tiny bit smarter now and ready to take on the day for having learned that? I'm like, yes. I know more stuff today than I did yesterday. I'm ready.
That was good stuff. That.
Yeah,
I loved it.
Yeah, but also really quickly, we didn't get into the Worf stuff, which I love the moment with Worf in that poem.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
I mean, how special was that, right? That was...
What was so it?
He had me going.
That's what it was. He goes,
This
is the story of a little ship that took a little trip. That was it.
Well, it rhymes.
And he actually had a smile at the end. Usually, when Jadzia does something funny, Worf just does like a pouting acknowledgement. Like he's like, you know, he says, it is a joke. I get it, but it's not funny, or whatever he says. That's not, you know. But this time he allowed himself to actually smile. And this was an episode that had, like you guys keep saying, these character moments. Worf finally smiled at Jadzia to the point where it almost looked like it hurt. Like I was like, have we ever seen Worf smile before? Because that's the first time I've seen it. It almost looked like his face couldn't contort that way. Odo and Quark had their moment together. Kira and Sisko laugh together. You know, we actually had some moments, and that's what these kind of bottle episodes are so good about, is the stories that are all overarching, you know, episodes with the, you know, those are made for story, you know, they just further along the seasonal story or whatever, or the series story. But these episodes give us more character growth. Mm-hmm. You know, we get to learn more about the character relationships and all that. And that's why I'm appreciating them a lot more now than when I had first seen this. Because before, I liked to see the serialized storytelling. It was amazing. It was awesome. It just made everything so much bigger. But now that I already know that big story, I want to know more about the characters within that story. And that's what episodes like this give us.
Hmm. It gives you more reason to invest in them.
Yeah.
And stay invested in them, because you care about them now. You know, I care about them.
and even more so than like Worf smiling, I think, I don't remember Worf ever playing a practical joke.
Right.
Really.
Exactly.
Right.
Telling
a little prank on her.
He got like her. He got her.
Yeah.
Yeah, he got me too.
And it was great because Dax is like, wait a minute. She grabs the pad out of his hand, like, you know, wait a minute. Let me see what you wrote.
Beautiful.
You wrote that? So it actually showed like a genuine kind of interplay between a relationship, like between a couple, like, get out of here. Let me see what you got on you. What are you doing right? You're messing with me. So I love that. And I love how that moment, how him getting her, that moved him so much, right? Like, I set you up. I got you. I played a prank on you. And that made him happy. So I actually really loved those moments. I thought this episode really knocked it out of the park when it comes to personal relationships, when it comes to kind of building those bonds. But I did have like my own nitpicks, and I was wearing my tie throughout the episode as well.
Yeah.
Although this episode was nominated for an Emmy for Outstanding Visual Effects.
Mm-hmm. Very nice.
Now the visual effects were amazing, because I was saying to myself, how did they kind of pull this off? Because usually, you know, usually it's with the green screens and whatnot, but this looked like they were actually in certain shots together. It was really good, well done.
Yeah.
The way they planned it.
When the Rubicon was in the warp core room, wherever they were, the engine room. I know so many technical words, but it was so cute. And then when she's flying up to warp space is so cute, and then flying itty bitty.
But that was one of my nitpicks. I was like, why are they flying so high? Like, you're literally you're going to get spotted by somebody. Like, you know, even if it looks like you're the size of a fly, I'm still going to be like, what the hell is a fly doing on the space station right now? Don't we have fly zappers? I thought they would be flying lower and kind of more indiscreet, because they seem to have like be in headshots with people, like when they're in their close-ups. And I'm thinking, well, this guy's like, literally, this thing is like right here. Like, you didn't see that?
Yeah,
he was like
that first. Was it Nog? I feel like it was Nog or Jem'Hadar. But yeah, they're flying like right here. They're like, and then there's the engine humming. I mean, why not just try to be more discreet? Why not give it a shot? They're like, do you think he can see us? I don't know, but this is fun, right? We could fly right in front of his face.
I think the first one was an accident, because they didn't know the Jem'Hadar was there. So they, when they pulled up, it was like, oh, woo, now we got to hide.
All right, right. Yeah. But that was part of me was like, they're not being discreet enough, right? Like in the actual flying around. But I get it. Sure. They needed to have them in shot. So I was okay. But just that was a miniature nitpick. But the biggest nitpick.
If you got a bigger nitpick, you go right ahead.
I don't know.
Cracking out the tie is pretty big.
All right, how about this? We'll leave this for the audience. We're going to leave this for the audience to decide. And Ryan, you go first, and we're going to see who does the audience think has a more valid, bigger nitpick.
Okay.
It's round 2 out of 3 of the nitpick number 4. First Ramataclan 7. At one point, Chief O'Brien says that they're 1 centimeter tall, but before that, Julian Bashir said that they were half the size of a comm badge, and I was like, wait a minute, but isn't a comm badge like 4 centimeters tall? That would make them 2 centimeters tall. And then I pulled out an actual comm badge and I measure it, and it's like 5 to 6 centimeters, which means they were like 2.5 centimeters tall. Piss me off. Dicks.
All right.
He laughed in here. Okay. Wow.
The old centimeter. Very good. Very good. Mine is a little bit different. It is based on size.
Okay.
And my thing is, if you're that small and you get hit with a photon from a Jem'Hadar ship, wouldn't it blow you away?
But did they get hit?
I thought they were receiving fire from like
I don't think they actually got hit. I think because they were so small that they went.
Okay. All right.
Like ninjas.
That. See, and I don't know the answer. I don't know which one. So this, we definitely need the audience for this.
I thought they were getting hit with fire. And I was like, wouldn't that Jem'Hadar fire, like, if they're 2,000 times smaller than they normally are, and if they got, and their ship was hit with a regular size.
I thought they were dodging all of them because they were so smart that Jem'Hadar couldn't hit them. But I was thinking it's not very smart of the Jem'Hadar to open fire near the warp core because that would just blow the entire ship up.
Right. And to add to that, what I was going to say is that if you are, your natural reaction, now we aren't Jem'Hadar, Galpha, Gamma or Alpha, or the mixture of Galpha. We are neither of those, but I bet just about every human that had a gun or a phaser rifle, if there was something that went right in front of your face, your first instinct would be to swat it, not to pull out your rifle and try to
shoot
it.
Oh, yeah.
Right? You would just hit it. You would just be like, what is this thing? Right? Especially if like you're this warrior beast, you would just bash it. But meanwhile, they're just doing target practice. Those Jem'Hadar Galphas.
Yeah.
Small Galphas.
I thought it was Delta, Alpha. Anyways, but yes, those were the like technical parts that I had problems with. Just like, you know, like you said, the size ratios, you know, if it was hit by a torpedo, what kind of effect would that have? And those kinds of things. They were just miniature things in my head.
Yeah, miniature.
Miniature things.
Miniature ships.
I was thinking the opposite though. The them firing the it's not phaser fire. What does the Rubicon shoot? What kind of fire?
Phasers. I think it's phasers.
Was it phasers? Well, I was wondering how big a phaser fire the small Rubicon would have against the Jem'Hadar.
It was pretty powerful. Yeah, they were getting
very
below.
Powerful. Yeah. Like almost like photon torpedo size powerful.
Yeah.
You know? But
yeah.
Little miniature photon torpedo powerful.
I love how we're all like nerds where we somehow know what photon torpedoes feel like. They're like, wow, that was like a photon torpedo. We don't know. But yeah, I thought the same thing when they got blasted. I was like, wow, that is remarkably powerful. That thing's got some
packs a punch
to it. We got to go to the free-for-all in just a second here. So everybody that's waiting for Jake Sisko guesses the IMDb score. It's going to be the first thing on the free for all because this is a good one. Here we go. But before we go over to the free for all, we do want to give a very special thanks to a few very special people. And their names are, you guessed it, Carmen, a.k.a. Skillet. TJ Jackson Bay out in Missouri, Bill Victor
Arukin.
Homer Freezy out somewhere in New Yeezy. Yvette Blackman also in New Yeezy somewhere. Eve England out in Wales. Dr. Anne-Marie Siegel. Titus the Man Muller. Tim Grandpa One Baum. Darlena Marie. John Mann. I guess Titus can't be the man of John's man. Rex A. Wood. Dr. Muhammad Noor. Joe Balsarati. Tierney C. Deekman, Mr. Ed Maurer out in Idaho, Anil O. Palat, Anil K. Chander, no relation, Anil. Collings, Lawrence Niels, also no relation, Isaac Stock, Ed Jarrett, and lastly, and especially not least, Lee, Dr. Susan V. Gruner. Thank you all so very much, and stick around. We'll jump on the free-for-all right now. Always remember the seventh rule.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino.
Chumba. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And welcome back to the seventh rule. We've got Sir Rock Lofton. Woo! And Ryan T. Husk. And Grandpa One is crying. And Goldie Scott. And the amazing Eve England out in Wales, and the incredible Dr. Susan B. Gruner, woohoo, with Barbies behind her, and Mr. Lawrence Niels, woohoo, out on the East Coast somewhere. Ms. Tierney C. Dinkman, woohoo. Mr. T.J. Jackson May out in Missouri. And finally, last but certainly not least, the amazing and enchanting Anne-Marie Siegel out in New Easy.
Yeah, New Orleans, right.
In New Easy. New Easy.
Which, oh, yeah. Okay.
All right. Did you say Ciroc?
I did.
Yeah.
Okay. I was stressing out.
And I'm Melissa Longo. Hello.
Yay!
Yeah.
She's Team Cardiff. Let's go.
Team Cardiff.
All right.
We are reviewing Deep Space Nine, episode season 6, episode 14, One Little Ship.
Okay. And everybody, you are in for a treat. Ciroc has saved his. Jake Sisko guesses the IMDb score. Oh, man. Anne-Marie's like, this is my lucky day.
What's this segment?
First, I found a penny on the ground, and now this.
Yeah.
I'm going 7.5 as a safe, kind of like right there. I'm going 7.5. I feel like.
Now, does anybody.
That's in the middle.
Anybody have a guess that doesn't know what it is?
I don't know what it is, but I think it should be higher than that.
Yeah. 8.3.
$1.
8.3.
Yeah. DJ always wins with the $1. $10.50. He's going to get that camper.
I gotta get you on Prices Right, man.
Oh, poor Eve. I'm so sorry. This is it's a game show, American game show. Have you spayed and neutered?
I'd say about a 7.2, give or take.
Lowest score.
No. I think it's in, I don't know. I'm gonna go for 8.4.
Wow. Well, did you get the Emmy nomination?
Right. Yeah, Melissa mentioned that.
Really?
For visual effects, like, you were saying, yeah?
Visual effects, yeah.
Oh, cool.
So, Anne-Marie, I'm guessing you know what the answer is, right?
I actually don't know. Okay, spoiler alert, this is not my favorite episode, except for the part about Worf and what he smells like, because I always want to hear about his
routine. You still give it a 10, though? Epic.
You know... I don't know if I voted on this one.
Wow, that bad.
If you can't do it, give it, like, just don't vote.
Sometimes that's usually how I do it. But yeah, I don't. I feel like, though, every time I rewatch it, it's more fun. But I just don't love those movies from like the 50s and 60s where people get really small. Like that Ron Howell movie.
What about
movie.
The 80s?
Well, so you don't like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Fantastic. Well, no, it's like that. It's
yeah,
like
what was the one in the 80s where they
Inner get space.
Inner Space, thank you.
Inner yeah. Space, yeah.
The third
yeah.
Doctor
but
Who
this
episode.
Is like the callback to Dennis Fantastic Quaid. Voyage or whatever that's called.
What about the one where they went into the bloodstream?
Yes, Raquel
that was an incredible Quaid. Voyage.
Yes,
yeah.
That's the one this is
They
like.
Shrunk them down and they Clark went through the aorta story. And the Minakava yeah. And...
So the answer is, if we're going by whoever got the closest without going over, I guess that's Ciroc Lofton, 7.5. It was a 7.7.
Yeah, the master.
Right around. Felt that
you're
was
on
it.
The pulse.
He is. Awesome. Well, let's talk about this episode. Who wants to, Goldu Scott wants to lead us off because he strikes first and he strikes hard.
Hard. I wrote my notes this week on one little post-it.
One little ship, one little post-it.
There's my one little ship too. It's all my props for this week. I'm a psychic guy these days.
Wait, yeah. hold up your ship again.
Props. I think that's actual ship,
size.
Isn't it?
That's actual size, right?
Oh, it looks like the actual size it was supposed to be.
Guys,
who would make great earrings?
Y'all remember the micro machines, man? They were awesome.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Can you micro machine.
Can you put it next to your head so we can see what it would look
so
like
the
if
size,
it was flying by somebody?
Like fly right into my, I could swallow it whole. Yep.
But interesting.
If you're concentrating on something and it is like right here, then you might not see it if they fly out of the way in time. It's,
yeah.
Some really quiet engines too. I don't
you
know.
You can actually get those micro machines as earrings on Etsy, but I don't have the lobes for it.
Oh man, I can
you do.
I have the lobes. You have it.
Good knowledge. Is knowledge.
I think you do.
I don't know, man.
Yeah.
I met
yeah,
a person.
Size.
I met a person at a con that had actually taken all of them and spray painted them like either silver or gold and made like giant medallions to wear on your chains.
Oh, that's cool.
That's cool. I was gonna do the DS9 one, but I was afraid it was definitely gonna hook on whatever I was, you know.
That's the thing.
The pylons.
Speaking of medallions, Medallion likes to remind everybody in the live chat that victory is like. So be sure to like this video. Give it 5 stars if you're listening in. Thanks, Medallion. Anyway, Scott, what do you got for us?
I enjoyed this episode a whole lot more. It was one of those I actually made a joke about how you go from Far Beyond the Stars to Honey, I Shrunk the Ship. And just like the anomaly that this is, that you go from that to that. And I enjoyed this a whole lot more. I guess I was just always overshadowed by the silliness of the tiny ship. And you had this story about becoming obsolete that was right there the whole time. And I guess I just hadn't paid attention to that with the first and the second. And so I really enjoyed that. But also the thing that glaringly hit me today while I was watching this, while I was on break at work, was why is it that the bad guys always capture the group of the good guys, and when they put them together in a room where they can talk and make plans every single time?
Great point.
Every single time
also check the manifest, make sure you have everybody.
Yeah,
that always is like another Star Trek thing.
But then they separated Cisco, which was probably really smart. But it was a lot more fun than I'd remembered it last time, so I did enjoy it. It was a pretty cool episode.
Yeah, I
think this one was actually like shot first before Far Beyond the Stars, which like
it was.
That's such a like crazy like roller coaster of emotions for the actors. But because there were so many like visual effects that took longer in post.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. What do you got for us today, Eve, out in Wales?
I just think this episode is just the cutest thing ever, and I was just watching it go, oh my gosh, everything's just so cute. And I just love it when Chief O'Brien and Bashir go into that sort of circuit room. And it's just as beautiful, just the way that set was. I was just, oh my gosh, I just want stuff like that in my house. It's just, I just thought everything about it was just really beautiful. And how you could see all the sort of, you know, when the ship was flying around, you could see all the little details. And it did just scream Inner Space at me, you know, when it pops out of the little thing and you think it's this huge scene, and then it's like these little tiny little doors that open with the steam coming out, and it's just so funny. And the only thing, also when I was reading the companion, they said that they made the ship, the mini ship, 6 inches because they had to put all the lights, so it had real lighting inside it like the bigger models that they use. So I thought that was really cool because it's supposed to be 4 inches, I think, in the script, but it didn't work with the electronics that way. So you can just tell that they, like you said, they spent so much time and effort on it. And there's just so many little jokes. And yeah, I think it's hilarious. And I think it certainly deserved more than 7.5. So I think we need to get voting higher.
7.7 is what it got, right? I think.
I just 10
but that's not high enough.
It's not high enough, exactly.
Never high enough.
Steve talked me into it. Well, and I also remember the like Worf poetry writing, which that tipped me over.
What else do you have on this episode, Anne-Marie? That
nothing, and that's it. I just want to hear the rest of Worf's poem.
There is nothing on the pad.
Do you want him to actually write it out or make up the whole thing for you?
I'd rather eat, well, make it up and then hear it sung.
Klingon opera. Nice.
TJ Jackson Bay, out in Missouri, looking forward to a nice weekend of football. Any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I enjoyed this episode. I always thought it was a fun one, you know, with the little ship flying around. I do have a nitpick, but I'll come back to that. I paid a lot more attention this time to, I think, like Scott was mentioning, the interaction between the first and the second, and, you know, the first or the second one, sorry, the second being, you know, wise and knowing what's going on and yet bound by duty to, you know, follow the orders of the first, even though they were to their detriment and he knew what was coming. And I thought the second did a great job. And I was wondering who played him. It's Fritz Sperberg. And, you know, I just feel like he did a great job, you know, with the vocals and acting through the makeup, you know, for someone that, you know, just came in to do one show. So great job to him. And so, okay, my nitpick is this, and I don't have a tie, but I have.
You have the nitpick fest.
Straighten your collar, man.
Fun spin.
Okay, so they fly into this anomaly and it makes them small. And then they warp out of it and stay small. And to get back big, they have to go back into the anomaly and fly out the way they came. But if you fly back into it, won't you get smaller?
That would be funny.
So scientifically, it doesn't make sense to me that you come out.
Yeah.
Like, okay, if you could go in and not get small, then why didn't you just go in that way in the first place? Or,
well, I think it had something to do with the tractor beam that helped them get small because they orchestrated their shrinkage.
All right, easy. I think they just
was just gonna
clarity of something.
4 inches.
Yeah.
Sorry, Sirach.
Okay.
Got him.
I don't know.
I'm sure somebody has a headcanon for it, but but that's a good start, Melissa.
I did want to point out real quickly, when I just mentioned the Four Horsemen, it did remind me of something, or the polarity, I just gave it away. But, you know, this is a fun one here to enjoy. The Four Horsemen of Reversing the Polarity.
That's fun.
And it's got Scotty, Jordy, Baylana, and Trip. Because they always reverse the polarity.
Yeah, but nobody holds a candle to Jordy's reversing polarity. He's
right.
Yeah.
Or his barrel roll.
Barrel.
Right, yes. When he's escaping, when he's like, everybody get out.
That's true.
The door's coming down.
Yes, every time.
Oh my gosh.
All right. Tierney C. Deakman, what have you got for us today?
I got lots of nitpicks.
No.
Oh, no.
Yes.
No,
but lots of good things too. I found myself very love hate with this episode and have in the past, and full transparency, I fell asleep on the rewatch. I mean, I haven't been sleeping well, not feeling great, but still, that if that's any tell of this. But I love that it's an homage to Fantastic Voyage, classic sci-fi, you know, Honey, I Shrunk the Ship, gotta do that. It feels like one of those things they had to do. And that's great, but it seems more interesting in the background of the episode what went into it, why it happened, the years that the idea was pitched over next gen and to multiple people and it finally happened. There's so much in the background that makes it a much better episode than, at least to me, was executed. There's no real B plot. We have what's happening on the Defiant and then following Fun Size Runabout. That's sort of a pseudo B plot, but it's slow paced, but not in a good way. I like a slow, steady pace, but this was just, you know, snore worthy.
Really?
Yeah.
Man, she's not pulling one little punches.
But, you know, they wanted more interesting villains, Harry Mudd or the Packlids. We didn't get that. We have some of the most dangerous villains in the Gamma Quadrant in the whole series. Capture the flippin' Defiant. And I'm just like, Cisco wants to blow up the ship at Warp 1. And I feel like I missed that fact on I don't know how many watch throughs, because it's just there needs more excitement. There needs to be more humor, because this plot is ridiculous. And the best we got is Kira's amazing laugh. This is the best we got, is just her cracking up. Like, this is ridiculous. And it's,
well, she thought so too.
Exactly. And it feels like it suffers from
that part.
They didn't have enough humor and they didn't take it seriously enough. It could have been one or the other. And there are some really great points, though. Obviously, the visual effects were fantastic. Just the way that the runabout moves through everything. They almost made it look like it's its own flying entity rather than being piloted by Jadzia. Though I don't doubt that her piloting skills would be that precise. Though there were a few times when I'm like, how the hell is no one noticing them? Like, she comes up in front of a Jem'Hadar's face and he just, I know the engines are quiet, like, you know, here's your little dishwasher, but regardless, it was fantastic. The miniature effects were fantastic. I love Circuit City with Bashir and O'Brien. It makes me feel like a kid again, staring upside down at the ceiling and imagining a new world. I always loved that scene. And like Eve said, very well put, I want that shit in my house. I want those everywhere because it's fantastic. It's dreamlike. The only thing that bothers me with that is Bashir's got a super brain. Why doesn't he realize that that cable has a toggle and notches? Turn it. It just bothers me. Also, again, he's a super brain, but they make him exposition patsy. He should know most of these things that are going on and be able to surmise, but we don't have enough detail. It's easy to miss things. Why the hell are they going into the anomaly? What is the anomaly? I want more about why they're studying it, about the shrinkage. I want to know more about that. I mean, they called it compression. It's actually compactification, but didn't like using that word. So, okay, they want to stick with some of the science, but not with the fact that photon torpedoes, no matter what size, should have the same yield. They should have blown up the damn Defiant, but they were just little electric, you know, loogies. But, you know, they've got that and the phaser fire in Circuit City, and that didn't do anything either. Just pick one. We have Alpha Jem'Hadar, and we never hear anything else about them. We don't know what they do that makes them more, you know, perfect for combat in the Alpha Quadrant. What are they better with?
Let me ask you this, Tierney, because Serac had similar thoughts that he wanted to know more about the science for it to fit. But let me ask you this. In order to add all of those things, what would you have taken out of the episode?
Less time of the crew puttering around in the engine room, and less time spent with the Jem'Hadar, frankly, or something that would tie more of what's happening and why, or have them have the Jem'Hadar or whatever the villain could have been take the ship because of the anomaly, because of the data that they're gathering, what they're doing there. You know, find a way to tie everything in. I mean, as far as I can remember, we don't see the runabout crew being toppled, and yet suddenly they've got, you know, instant bruises everywhere. There's not enough excitement in one way or the other, serious or comedic. I mean, a scene was pitched like Space CSI, where one of the characters was supposed to be, you know, held hostage, and Sisko is just like, everything's okay, it's going to be fine. And villain's like, no, it's not, and shoots the hostages, you know, right in the head, shoots his head off, and they turned that down. Like, they could have gone really brutal with this. And it just feels like so much in such a ridiculous thing. I love mini runabout. I want mini floating, hovering runabout, complete with tiny, you know, Bashir and tiny, smaller than a potato O'Brien, and of course Dax. But
potatoes O'Brien, that's a thing, yes. Isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And a common joke in my household. But I just wanted more with something that is an homage to classic sci-fi.
Got it. But you wanted a two-parter. Wanted one little ship, one parts little ship. One and two. Siroc, when you were, because we kind of touched on this a bit, but we didn't really go into detail. Were you kind of thinking along those lines, or just a little bit more explanation on the science?
You mean as a part two, like a two-parter?
No, as in like in the episode that they didn't explain a lot of the science as much as you would have liked.
Yeah, the science was... I kind of agree with her points. One, I thought that the Bashir's character was a little bit too uninformed in this moment. And he just seemed like, you know, like, speak English, guys. I don't know what you're talking about. I'm like, come on, man, you got to know something, because we're like, you're around these.
You took physics at the academy to get an
A. Yeah, you're a superhuman.
Also, you're a human computer. Like,
yeah.
Eidetic memory, yeah, too.
But yeah. I also think that kind of goes to Einstein's thing of you're a genius in some things and not a genius about other things. So, yeah, he's a genius, but if you haven't studied something extensively, he's not going to know what those things are. And when he's in the circuitry area, he's suffering from hypoxia, essentially. So his brain is going to be slower still. Right. I don't think those are.
And Bashir has proven that he can study something for a long time and still not be good at it, like women. Right.
Women.
You guys all knew where that was going.
Also, he saw the episode of TNG Rascals and knows these situations just usually take care of themselves.
That's right, yeah.
Just hold on, you'll be all
right. Well, Lawrence, what have you got? Geek Life Rules, by the way.
Love Geek Life Rules.
See, it's funny. It's funny you mentioned Rascals, because I sort of, Rascals is one of those episodes like this one where something serious that actually threatens the lives of our heroes is happening, but it's so ridiculous that in my mind I don't process it the same way I would process an episode where, like, you know, oh my god, it's serious and someone may die and get shot in Dukata. I process as, oh, this is a romp. The serious storyline with the Jem'Hadar for me is the B plot, because especially I didn't realize that this was shot before Far Beyond the Stars, because airing after it, this is like, oh, this is the romp where we can relax after having our emotions wrung to within an inch of their lives.
That's what I thought.
The Jem'Hadar is the B plot for me, and I'm enjoying the science things that, and now I want to go back and watch it again, because the science part of it, with one exception that I'll mention in a second, the science part of it, I'm like, yeah, that doesn't make any sense, but that's because this is the romp, it's okay. You know, and there's just so many really light, funny moments. I'm like, oh, there's a serious thing with the Jem'Hadar. I'm sure that'll sort itself out because, you know, we're having our romp. We're having our romp this week.
Right.
The moments between Jadzia and Worf are just killer. The moments between or Kira's laugh that Tierney mentioned in the beginning, the absolute brilliant final moment with Quark and Odo and O'Brien and Bashir. Where weren't you guys taller before?
It's for the last like 30 seconds alone.
You know, they say so much is said without having to say anything, just with looks between the two of them and between the two of them through all their makeup on top of it. It's just brilliant. The only moment, like science wise, that ever stood out to me, and this stood out to me when I first saw it like a billion years ago, was when the Rubicon comes out of the panel. The plasma injector panel. I'm like, really? That one little thin door is supposed to protect whoever's on the other side of it?
Yeah, and then it closed right back up.
and then it just springs back up. And I'm like, really? That's all. Like, if I'm the engineer who has to work at that station, I'm going to be constantly looking down at the panel between my crotch, going, "Can I get a sign someplace else, please?"
Put a lock on this thing.
That's the only thing protecting me from. There's no lock on it. There's no nothing. It's just little cat door between the engineering station and the 8 billion Kelvin plasma that's going through the other side. That stood out for me even when I was a kid. I went, that's ridiculous. But everything I bought into the ridiculousness because I was like, oh, this is the romp,
right?
This is our romp, and I can only have my emotions torn up like Far Beyond the Stars so often without something in between. So, and Rascals is the exact same way. There are a lot of things where you're going, the Ferengi should be serious. They're threatening to murder children and beam them down. Yeah. But in my head, the first thing I think is, now, yes. This is the romp.
That's such a good impression.
I want to see my father. This is the ice cream episode for me. This has always been, even upon rewatches. Now I'm going to watch it with everything that I'm hearing from some of you guys and go, oh man, this is deep and I missed it. But this has always been the ice cream episode after the really heavy dinner.
Totally. Right. And speaking of father, I think that's the right time to go to Grandpa One. What do you think?
Yes.
you're a generation lower now. Now you're just father. Pretty soon you'll be son.
When I had that job interview today, I forgot to change my name on the Zoom. And so they saw Grandpa One. So I didn't realize it, but the hiring guy was going like, should we call you Tim or Grandpa One? And I'm like, oh, crap. But no, anyway, I got to admit, when I first watched this episode a few years ago, I thought it was the dumbest thing I'd ever seen.
You son.
I don't think I ever finished it. But I rewatched it this morning. And a couple of things. I actually enjoyed the episode, but the one B plot that y'all mentioned was between the Alpha and the Gamma, Jem'Hadar. And I've been called an elder statesman before, and I can understand the number two is going like, yeah, I'm the most experienced, but he's the future, so I just. And of course, he had a couple of "I told you so" moments, but. But no, I have to say, I think my favorite part was the very end when Odo was saying, I think you're a little bit shorter, because just a couple of weeks ago, I happened to catch a MASH rerun where they were pranking Charles Winchester, where they kept changing his clothes. So he thought he was losing weight, and then they changed clothes and he thought he was gaining weight.
Oh no.
You got muted.
You're muting. You muted yourself.
He's coming back in 2, 1. There he is.
There I am. I don't know what point I went mute.
Someone pranked you.
the MASH episode where they pranked Charles Winchester by changing his clothes. So they kept swapping out his clothes. So he thought he was losing weight. And then they swapped him out and thought he was gaining weight. Just pranking him like that. But I don't think the first time through, I don't think I ever made it all the way to the end to see that. And I thought that was a nice little ending. But I did enjoy this a lot better than the first time it was on, because I'm like, oh, this is so stupid. And I actually paid attention this time, and the Worf and the Jadzia interaction. And so there was some humor in it. And then the special effects were, the CGI was really cool.
Totally.
So
That's what the Emmy was for. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, what about you, Sue? You've been very patient playing with your dolls while you're waiting. And any thoughts? Did you like this better than the first time you saw it?
Yes. Oh. I did not like it the first time when it came out, but I watched it twice. And I, all the points about the science and everything are good points, but I didn't think about that. I just thought it was a fun episode. I love that they stole a line from Casablanca.
Oh, what was the line?
This is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I love the ending. I thought it was very cute. I like the way Jadzia poked open the doors with the, you know, gentle little tap. And I thought it was really cute and fun. Mm-hmm.
With her light touch or gentle touch.
Yeah, with her light touch.
Whatever it was.
I thought about the oxygen shrinking and, you know, I thought all about all of the science and I thought it's a TV show.
Exactly.
Why didn't she just beam in more oxygen?
Is that something they could do? Or an oxygen tank, maybe.
They did it the first time.
Yeah,
that's, you're right. Yeah.
With them when they beamed them in, but that would take away the urgency of the
right raising.
Did
the
they
space.
Not have little? Yeah. Did they not have little environmental suits in the round of that would be the same?
I thought about that.
They should.
That's so cute.
They should.
Okay. Well, and then they could just beam in little environmental suits.
We're just about out of time here, everybody. But thank you all for joining us, and Eve, this is for you. It's this The Price is Right.
I got it. When I went to Price is Right,
my gosh.
And my friend got it to showcase
Bob Barker.
Yeah. Eve from Wales, you're the next contestant on The Price is Right.
That's the one. You know, I actually got to see that wheel once.
Yeah,
I was like doing some acting gig on a soap opera wherever it was. I think maybe it was the
at the Grove.
I think it was
where they film it.
Maybe General Hospital or something like that. But anyway, yeah, they were moving stuff in and out of studios, and it was just sitting there in the hall in between some of the stages. And so I was just like, so I took a couple selfies with me like this. Yeah. When security walked out, like, oh, I better go.
Is it really that heavy? Are they like? Is it really that heavy?
No, it had some
just
meat
faking?
To it. Yeah, it had some.
Okay.
Some girth.
I feel like there's a production person behind them going, make it look hard.
Did it make the sound?
With the ticker?
I don't think so. I think it has to be plugged in for that, and it was moved out into the hall. But I made that sound. Anyway, we do have to run, everybody. By the way, Eve England has officially been with us for over 100 episodes this month.
Yay! Oh my gosh. That's amazing.
Come on down. also, our good friend who's not here has done the same, Homer Freezy, out Freezy. Somewhere in New Yeezy.
Yay.
He didn't want to be here today, but thank you all very much. Great. So we got to run. Sweet. Everybody at home, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll catch you next time. Until then, always remember the seventh rule and tell Homer and Eve thank you online.
Yes.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.